Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
I am and a man is who I am. I am an...
That's too high, darling. I did say that.
Hello, my darlings. Hello. We're just attempting to make the Zoom work here. Margaret is locked in some sort of limbo. She's back. And, you know, I'm really starting to wish she wasn't. Let's just run through. I sent the Zoom password straight to her. And you know what I mean? I'm not 100% sure she's worth this effort is what really makes it dig in deep. You know, we've got our guest. He's waiting in the waiting room, which must be hell. I've literally put nothing in there for him because I can't. If I could, a little magazine, a talking doll. Anyway, quick chat on the phone first, Margaret, shall we? I ask her. Do you know Rufus? Should be Foon, I put, which was a spelling mistake, but I thought that's actually a wonderful thing between fun and fine. How are you getting in, Margaret? I meant on, but anyway. Shall I send again? She replies, being weird, which, you know, coming from Margaret could mean anything. But I just said, you, as in, are you being weird? She said, rebooting. And again, I said, you? He said, yes, me. Is that number definitely right? Hang on. Yes, try again, but really look at it. Ha, ha, ha. I don't know what you're laughing at, Margaret. Just keep saying launching. God. Right. Just keep saying launching. Oh, crap. I think I know what I did wrong there. Hang on. Let's pause it. Hello, Rufus. Hello. You're in bed.
Hello.
Margaret's still not here. I think she's given up. I really do. I don't know where she is. No, she's gone. She's completely gone. I don't think she's well. I really don't. There's something up with her. She reminds me a lot of Sue Clinch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you met her, but in the early days when she first began, you know, when things first started going wrong, because that was the original. A lot of people don't remember the original lockdown, which was, of course, when the cold first came along.
Was she alive then in 1918?
She wasn't alive, but she's lived a lot of past lives.
Yeah.
No, Margaret's just said, should Rufus leave and start again? A to okay, what? Not working.
Was yet. It what not a very strong start for me?
That doesn't make any sense, Rufus. No. I've just done a long introduction to myself, which was maddening, where I was explaining what was going on. She said A to okay equals still. What does that mean?
I have no idea at all.
I don't know what that means at all.
Does she communicate in kind of a series of emojis and abbreviations, like very, very young people?
She's not that young, though. And if that's, I mean, don't get me wrong, she's not old, bless her. She's written A to okay equals still. What could that ever mean? That can't mean anything. We'll try again. All right, Margaret. All right.
Well, all right.
We don't have time to dick around with Margaret.
No,
she's
no.
You know, she's on very thin ice as it is.
Apparently. I know she gets like this, doesn't she? I can absolutely imagine
the
situation you're having to deal with. I mean, it's management. It's what you're involved is senior management.
I'm stuck here in this room, really, with Sue, Mother Mahogany, and my granddaughter Lemon. I can't look after Margaret again.
No, I know.
Before I know it, I'll be bloody having to send online massages to Dan Tetzel, her partner and husband. Oh, God, what's she saying now? We'll try again. Ah, yeah. No. Shall I join on the phone? What? God, she's a nightmare. She really is, Rufus. We'll start again. We'll stop and start again.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm aware you've been here for 18 minutes already, and I apologize. Oh, she's here. She's here. Fuck, that was close. Fuck, that was close, Margaret.
Is she there? I can't see her.
Okay.
Oh, I can see a little box.
There. Uno, hang on. We can see you, but we don't believe you, which is a lot of her career, sadly.
Oh, she's there.
You're there. Margaret, just in the nick of time. You don't know how close that was. No, darling, you're pointing it at your forehead. Right, now I can see your whole face.
Can't hear you, though. Can't
hear us. No, can't hear you, darling. God, she's pointing really faces here. I mean, she's provided a lot of content already, to be honest.
Yeah.
Right, just by virtue of not being able to do stuff. Can you hear us?
She sounds like a Dalek.
Well, she's always sounded like that, bless her. Rufus, how are you?
I'm fine, Anna, and how are you?
Well, I'm all right. You know, I'm getting better. I've got into a sort of routine of just, you know, having an egg, getting up, having an egg, you know, cracking it, cooking it, different way every other day. So I'll do boiled, couple of scrambled, couple of poached, then a couple of fried, come back to boiled.
Never coddled? You never coddled the egg?
Oh, fuck, no, I've never coddled an egg. No. I mean, I've mollycoddled a couple, but I don't think I've ever coddled a chicken's egg. How do you do
that? No. I think it involves heating an egg in a small chamber, crucible of sorts. So you get like a boiled egg, but you've already plopped it in. I don't know. I'm winging it
that
a bit, Anna, because I can't exactly remember.
It's not where you make a tiny hole and suck it through, because that's what Sue does.
No.
Boiled
eggs.
A face hugger.
Exactly.
She looks like
When I lived in New York for a brief time, when I was appearing on Broadway, I'm sure we'll get to this, Anna, at some point.
God, that's exciting. They
don't eat boiled eggs in New York, really. So
it won't eat boiled eggs.
I craved a boiled egg. After day three in New York, can imagine, without a boiled egg. I was absolutely climbing the walls. And I had to use a shot glass in the end because there were no egg cups anywhere.
No egg cups in the whole of New York.
No egg cups. Could not find an egg cup for love nor money. And I had to use a simple shot glass, or in fact, the box the egg came in. And I'd sit there hunched over my breakfast bar in my Williamsburg apartment, eating a boiled egg like some sort of, like a leper. Exactly.
Pariah.
Yeah.
If they saw you, do you think you'd be in prison or?
Well, I don't know. Obama was still in power at that stage, so it was a very different
time. Oh, God, they were happy days, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
Right. Margaret, in before we get into politics, she's always got a few things to say on that subject. Mm. She's in.
That's fine.
Are you putting this on, Margaret? It feels like you're putting this on. This is the sort of thing she does, you see, Rufus. She'll do this, auditions and so on, things like this. It's a powerful performance, though. Oh, God. She's gone. She's gone. So, Rufus, darling.
Yes.
So, we met at my live show.
Yes.
And you'd just done a live show, hadn't you? Or were you about to?
I was doing a show at the National Theatre, I think, at the time. I was doing translations. Brian Friel's play Translations. I think that's what I was doing.
And you say, hello, I'm Rufus. I'm an actor. I said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
As are we all.
Well, we are, aren't we, in many ways?
We had a lovely chat, didn't we, darling? And here
we
are.
We did.
Now. You're in your bed.
I am.
A lot of time in bed?
A fair amount of time. I'm actually getting up quite early because of these bright, sunny days that the Lord has blessed us with.
Yes.
I'm finding that I'm often up with the lark about 6:15 or so. I potter downstairs. I make myself a strong cup of coffee and curl up with a little book. And the household is asleep. My son is asleep. My wife, the bird song, but no aeroplanes, very little traffic, all that sort of thing. And it's been very nice to do that. It's been lovely.
Yes, nothing else going on other than your own.
No, the sound of my beating heart.
Great. Right, so we had to have another break after all that zooming and zimming and jumping off and on. Margaret fucking breaking down. Was a natural breakdown, Margaret, or was it?
It was, yes, both a technological and an emotional one.
So for you, the two are intrinsically linked, aren't they, since you had that update? Thank God you did, because it's really changed your career, actually.
Well, it's all about mental health these days.
It's all about mental health, isn't it? What is? What is, darling?
Life, art.
Everything. Oh, God, yes, we're all trying to keep our bubbles not bursting. Talking of that, Sue, I had to cut out again because Sue had something burst, one of her bubbles, and so I had to just gower her down, didn't I, my darlings?
Is she all right?
All right, yes, she just doesn't, she won't let any water get on her hair. She was born a long time ago. I mean, she's older than me, you know, I shouldn't have to be doing all this. She was told a long time ago by a gypsy queen, if you can say that.
No, I don't think so.
Can you not?
You're a different generation, though. It's fine.
Yes, yes, yes. If it gets wet, she'll die, was what she was told. So, unfortunately, it's a real nightmare, you know, having to shower her. You know each other already, which is great, but also I'm ever so slightly jealous. You were just talking about what's going to happen while I was out cleaning up the bubble. You were just having a chat about what's going to happen to the theatre after this dreadful disease.
It's a post-theatre landscape.
Yeah.
The post-theatre landscape. Well, I've been living in one of those for some time, purely because I haven't managed to cinch? Is that the word? I haven't managed to clinch. Literally my best friend's surname.
You should have remembered that name.
I haven't managed to sue clinch myself a job. So what do we do with the theatre landscape, Rufus? So you work a lot in theatre.
I do, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I was very worried that the smaller theatres would go to the wall immediately, the pub theatres. and so on. But of course, they've got pretty low overheads. They've got rent to pay, but they haven't got many permanent staff. But the National Theatre, where I worked last year and where I should be rehearsing this very day, starting a new thing at the Littleton, is in real financial crisis. And the money from One Man, Two Governors and War Horse and all of that has gone so far, but it's pretty much run out.
Online One Man, Two Governors.
Well, no, I mean, they were doing... the show itself made a lot of money for the National. So did War Horse and so did Curious Incident.
Oh, right. Oh, so that money's been...
Yeah, and that went to the West End and it would have brought a lot of money. Under the...
propping up all of the failures.
Is it
exactly,
under the theatre? I imagine it's a bit like, you know, the Goblin Bank in Harry Potter.
Oh, the money, yes.
Do they keep it under the theatre?
I think they do.
What I would give to get back in the National Theatre and get my hands on some of that loot.
So, God, yes.
It's all there underneath the ground. And it's all in gold, of course. So, Rufus, they've stopped that. I mean, they're just about keeping by. But where do we put the people? That was the big question we were asking. You can't have one theatre with one person.
They're all old.
Margaret, you wanted to speak.
am I here? Did I make it onto the call or not? Yes, we're saying they're all old.
What?
And theatre goers.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, the
idea with theatre is that you do sit very close to each other and to the stage. So it's like.
And it's going to take months for ordinary people to become comfortable with the concept of sitting in close proximity to somebody much older than them.
God, yes. Because either they'll get you or you'll get them, you know.
Well, exactly,
And also there's that risk if you're an audience member like me, where you do get that impulse, I know Margaret and I have talked about this before, to just leap on the stage and join in.
That's right.
And they're going to have to stop that for a start.
They must. I mean, there are very strict rules in place about that anyway, but I know...
Well, it was always frowned.
Nothing will stop you. Well, I know, but I mean, if you won't be stopped.
When you genuinely think this play's all right, but it could be better. As far as I'm concerned, you know, it's known as, we talked last week, didn't we, Margaret, or a couple of weeks ago about actor's jealousy, which is the right to kill a man if you're an actor and you're very jealous of him.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that.
Well, also there's, of course,
clinch again.
Actor's clinch. It is actually called an actor's clinch. It's when you, I must keep remembering the word clinch, I keep forgetting it, but it's where you feel the need to jump on the stage. And if it's basically a 50-50 thing, if what you've got is better than what they're doing, and you ask all the audience at the end, then you're allowed to stay in the play.
Also, well, didn't you do that at the Globe?
One of the actors are kicked out. Yes, I did. And I completely rewrote the second act of Henry VI.
Henry VI, part three. You leapt up on stage. I can't remember who it was. Michael Pennington or someone was... shambling through one of the final
Michael
speeches.
Palin.
Pennington or someone like that. I don't know which actor it was. And you threw yourself on stage.
Oh, God, I leapt on like a tiger. I mean, I was wearing my tiger hat. And I leapt on and I just, you know, I just thought this show needs a tiger.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that. I don't know what it is, but every time I've read Henry VI, part three, which is every other day, I always think, this is probably his best. I mean, we all agree Henry VI, part three is probably his next.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote it as he was dying, I believe.
I think that's the last line, and this is my best.
and this one is my best.
Yes, you remember Shakespeare pops up at the end and goes, and this is my best.
Yes.
And this is the best one.
This is the best one, thanks for coming, is how... Yeah. Traditionally the play ends.
But of course, Anna, your version of it, one of the interesting things about it is if you do that, if you do join in and transform a play, you can keep the play going in a sort of rolling form so that it never ends.
Well,
because
eventually someone else will join you and other actors
will die.
We all know, as actors, our ideal audience is other actors. Preferably other actors who aren't doing that well. You know, so they understand it, but they're also looking at you in a sort of awe and envy. Not to the point where...
Jealousy.
Yes, no, I was going to say that, Margaret. Not to the point where they might commit actors' jealousy. You know, it's fascinating when... I don't know how many people who aren't actors listen to this, but I don't think they've got any idea how fucking dangerous it is doing what we do and how complicated. I thought it was just saying things that other people wrote down loudly. But there's so much more. Anyway, enough. Rufus has got to walk his dog. Enough silly bollocks. But, Margaret, you were telling a funny story about the Sultan of Brunei. Would you like to tell it again?
I was remembering, in a time before COVID, I don't know if you remember.
Yes, the 80s, yes.
But there was a time where the Finborough, which is a tiny theatre in
West London, wonderful.
Very, very sweaty. They were putting on a play which starred Kelly Brook as a stripper. It was when she was getting into acting.
Has she got out yet?
I think she has. She's in Bake Off now.
Oh, right.
Which is where all actors want to be, to be fair.
Yes, to be fair, yes.
The Sultan of Brunei, or maybe one of his lackeys.
Ben. Did you say Bake Off or Burke Off?
Burkhoff's still acting.
No, sorry, yes, that is...
Although I do...
The last thing any actor wants to be is in a Burkhoff.
Well, it depends if it's celebrity
Burkhoff. You've got to be really skint.
Great British Burkhoff.
So anyway, Kelly Brook was playing a stripper at the Finborough in a play.
Yes, and said, could I book all of the seats for one night's performance?
The Sultan of Brunei said this.
The Sultan of Brunei, because basically he wanted to... I don't know, interesting, I don't know where he would have sat at the back in the dark. I was just saying, it wasn't a one-woman show, it was like, it was a full play.
Yeah. I think the best place for properly mad people to sit is always right in the middle of the front row. A friend of mine was in a play a few years ago with Linda Bellingham, and I can't remember who else was in it. The mad woman in the front who kept reaching between her legs to rustle around in plastic bags throughout the show stood up during the curtain call and handed each of the actors a little gift.
What was the gift?
Well, it varied.
Tangerine.
So during the applause, she would be clapping and saying, good acting, very good, very, very good acting, which is, again, what you want to hear from an audience member,
yes.
Particularly in
the
front row.
I sort of do.
All the way through.
Exactly. What's stopping? Where is the rule that says... that you can't just stand up in the middle of a show if someone's done something that's moved you and said, good acting.
Do you have to, as an actor, stop and say thank you?
I think you do. I think it's only polite. I mean, what else are you going to do?
And did she
thank you very much.
At the end of the show?
She did. During the bows, they were literally going up and down during the curtain call. And she stood up, said, Linda, I've got this for you. Don't open it now. You'll embarrass me. And just went along the line giving, and it was an alarm clock or a kind of a pair of socks or, you know, it was kind of low-end Christmas presents.
Father Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
I did a satire last year called Brexit at the King's Head and the mad woman in the front, in the middle of the end, during the bow. And it was really alarming because she had veins popping out of her neck. She was so angry. And I couldn't tell what she was saying at first.
Like, just sounds like Sue Clinch.
It could well have been Sue Clinch, to be fair. You were probably in real danger of one of those going. And then you'd just be covered, all of you. And that wouldn't be the kind of present. No.
Terrible, terrible bubble. But no, it turns out that she was shouting, it's true! It's true!
Oh, God. And it was true. It was a factual... Did you turn around and go, well, yes, this is a...
Yes, that's the idea.
Yeah. I did a play with Patricia Routledge a few years ago, who is a redoubtable woman, extraordinary woman.
You're going to have to remind me what redoubtable means. It doesn't mean they don't doubt.
Well, just imagine what Pat Routledge is like. And then,
yes.
Yeah, she's redoubtable, stout and formidable and strong.
In the dictionary, and it says Pat Routledge.
Yes, basically, yes. It was a play about the abdication crisis. I was playing Edward VIII and she was playing my mother, Queen Mary. And at the end of the play, when we were performing in Guildford, we heard a very, very elderly voice in the audience going, is it finished? Is it stopping? Is it finished? And we thought, this is quite loud. I mean, louder than that, but really loud.
Stopping like it's, a car crash.
Is it over? Is it over?
Or torture.
And Patricia and I just kind of caught eyes and decided not to laugh and just kind of carried on. And it was only after when we came off stage, someone said, oh, did you know that the writer, Royce Wrighton, is in tonight? And we said, how old is he now? He's about 94. And sure enough, it was the writer of the play, hadn't been performed for about 20 years, sitting in the audience, needed the loo or needed something to happen and just interrupted a performance of his own play with, is it over? Is it finished? And we had to go up to him in the bar afterwards and thank him.
The bubble was going to burst.
It was. It was on the point of it.
Did he enjoy it?
I think he did. But he also said to his daughter, who was looking after him, said, my father's so pleased you've decided to do his play again. And we all said very solemnly, because it is a lovely play, called Crown Matrimonial. We said, we're very honoured to be forming your play, Mr. Wrighton. And he said, when do I get my money? When do I get my money? Do I get my money? And his daughter said, yes, don't worry, Daddy. I'm looking after all of that. It was very sweet.
I love the idea of him asking the actors for it.
Exactly.
Yes. Do we
he was still at his eye on the box office.
Well, I mean, I've done that in a play before, went on stage, just turned around to the actors and said, when do I get my money, you know? It was not a good play. I think you were in it, Margaret, actually.
Yeah, very sure of it.
How much,
money?
By the way, what did you want to pay me for this, for doing it? Because it will help your career. I really think it will.
I know. I'm just ready for the spike.
You've had a wonderful career, but this will really take you up into the big league. So Rufus Gerard Wright or Gerard?
Gerard Wright.
For these days. I know you keep changing. You've got
You're not like Gerard.
Oh, I hate Gerard. Rather like you probably hate Caban.
Caban. Yes, well, Anna often calls me Caban.
Gerard, your real name, Rufus?
No, it's a double-barreled name. It is a rather phony one, invented by my grandfather not that long ago, you see. So I've abbreviated back to Wright for my acting purposes. Rufus Wright is my stage name. I always thought a double-barreled name would be a rather kind of lumpy, unwelcome addition for kind of rough and ready parts that, of course, I'm naturally groomed for. Well, we want a kind of burly docker. Well, let's get Rufus Fortescue.
Rufus Gerard Wright.
Sopwith von Gerard Wright in. No. But Rufus Wright, he might be able to do it.
You've lost me now. I've gone down the train.
Oh, dear.
All I did was say my name.
And did you need some money?
So Rufus, let's do the Rufus Wright story.
Talking to actors, trying to understand their process. We're talking to actors, yeah, they rule the world.
So where did it begin? Shropshire?
No, an army base in Germany. My father was a soldier.
Was he a famous soldier?
Yeah, he was a major general. He was 40 years in the army and highly decorated and a very brave, a brilliant man. He died, unfortunately, 7 years ago, but he was a wonderful, wonderful man, yes.
You love him? Sorry, but I mean, you know, because some people resent their military dads, don't they? You know, kind of.
Yes, I think they do.
He didn't have a problem with you being an actor and all that stuff.
He did. When I started out. Of course he did. It's amazing how being on television can alter one's parents' perspective of being an actor. You know, it's all kind of, how are you going to pay the bills? Oh my God, they're on the television. By the time I was in the West End and, you know, I was in 39 Steps for a year or so, about 10 years ago. And he came to see that and brought a busload from the village. And by the time I was at that level of, you know, work, he was very, very, very impressed and very proud. And it was lovely, actually. It was great because it was not what he was expecting me to do or, you know, what was a general's son would usually do. So he was very supportive of me.
He was a general. I thought we said
Major general. Yeah,
wow, both. Is that bigger than a general?
Well, there are...
Be a minor general?
After brigadier comes major general, then lieutenant general, and then full four-star general. Field Marshal doesn't exist anymore. So he wasn't quite... When you become a Lieutenant General, you become knighted automatically as well. So you're Lieutenant General, Sir Annam, you know, so on. Yeah, so he was pretty high up. When you get to that level, you're almost a politician, really. You're spending a lot of time in Whitehall and you're not really working with soldiers. But my dad was a real soldier. He loved hanging out
still in the mud.
The men and women down in the mud and, you know, kind of stealing cigarettes and phantom.
Day is a big day. It's VE Day.
That's right.
For everyone day.
Yeah, yeah.
Will you be celebrating?
Well, I don't know. My mother's very anxious that I should do something, and I suppose I ought to do something. But in lockdown, there's not much we can do, is there, really? I shall certainly have a drink. I don't know if that's marking it.
Hello, I'm Jack Beaumont. I do Crime Club. In Series 1, I spoke to people like this.
Did you not kick a policeman in the head?
Yeah, that was... When was that? I was 17. Wait, was I 17 or 19? I think it might have been 19, actually.
In Series 2, I talked to people like this.
There was a paedophile with one leg. I kicked him clean out of his wheelchair. About four of us, I mean, we battered him.
And this.
Cheating on your boyfriend to give him gonorrhea? Do you want to go there, or would you rather not?
Yeah, no, I could talk about it.
I have jingles like this. That's Crime Club, where strange people tell stories involving bad behaviour. New episodes out every Monday.
Margaret, I just saw our old friend Helen George. Do you know Helen George, Ruth?
Yes.
Yes, so Helen George is singing for the Queen, or sung for the Queen. Have you seen this? Oh, Margaret's crying. Are you all right, Margaret? She's getting actors' jealousy.
I can't kill her, darling.
Well, you could do it, actually. Actually, yes, get actors' jealousy. You should.
Yes.
So you could try and do that, Rufus, see if you could sing for the Queen. Don't you know?
I could, I suppose. It might be a little bit late now. I don't know.
So, Rufus, military dad. And it wasn't the acting that he was against in a namby-pamby way. It was more the money. Is it going to make any money, like fighting does?
Yeah, I think so. I think he lived his life with a monthly paycheck, like most people do, and literally couldn't get his head around the idea of someone who was self-employed. I think it was as much that as anything else. So I remember I did an advert for the Link mobile phone shop in the early 2000s. Remember the Link?
The Link?
The Link. It was a branch of Dixon's or Curry's. Whatever. It was called The Link.
Did you kill that?
Did you end it?
Did I kill that brand? No, I didn't. I revived its ailing fortunes. I had to say, sure. And you text a lot to a customer. Anyway, they paid me quite a lot of money. And my mum and dad would ring me and say, but how are you? I mean, how do you live? How do you pay your bills? I'd say, well, I got that advert, so that's paid me quite a lot of money. They were like, yeah, but I mean, how do you pay for food and bill? And I was like, because of all the money from the Link, because of the thousands of pounds that I got.
It's not
the advert. And they go,
it's not acting
yeah, but
money.
I mean, how do you buy your basics? And I was like, this is just not going in, is it? They literally couldn't understand the idea of earning money for tarting around, you know. Yeah.
And did your dad or mum ever do any acting? Were they in the acting corps?
Yeah, my dad did a bit of, I can't remember where it was. I think it was in the Middle East in the 50s or 60s, a production of Oliver or something. There was a bit of that. There was quite a lot of orange wool around the place.
I did that once. I went to this fancy dress party as Noddy Holder and honestly, with Pritstick.
Ooh.
Orange fur sideburns.
Oh, ouch! Pritstick. Oh, that's awful.
Weirdly, it was fine.
Peel it off afterwards.
Yeah.
Did you do one big rip, or did you?
I did.
But it wouldn't. It would go all slimy and dusty.
Yeah.
It?
By the end of the night, it had slid off in a very silly way.
Shortly before lockdown, I played a fawn. in a pilot, and they just used—I think they just used real glue. And then just a professional makeup artist who's done my makeup a lot. But every now and again, I start to think, should I look into your background? Because I'm not sure you really know what you're doing. They really did just slap glue on me.
Art teacher.
Mm.
They just cut a load of hairs off and just stuck them all over me. And it genuinely took 3 days to get it off.
Oh.
Burnt all my arms. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
I actually look literally like Sue Clinch. We were. Mum wasn't in the military. Well, she was a soldier's wife.
Her dad was a soldier as well. Very military background. All my grandparents were soldiers. So my brother was a soldier and my uncle and all sorts. But
oh, God, it's all around you.
That's right. I've played endless. I'm always playing soldiers. You know, I'm always marching up and down. And I quite often end up, in fact, I've worked with Dan, I've worked with Margaret's husband as a military advisor on a show that he did, The Wipers Times,
yes.
In which I was asked to go along and teach the actors how to march up and down and salute convincingly and all that sort of thing. And I did a film called War Machine with Brad Pitt out in Abu Dhabi about General Stanley McChrystal. And I had to teach a few people on that how to come to attention and all that sort of thing. But it's a kind of like a little corner of choreography that I've carved out for myself, which is quite useful.
It's a thing. That's what you have to have, Margaret. That's what we need. We need a thing. I tried to make mine belly dancing. I couldn't do it was the problem. So I sort of, kept getting hired to teach people how to do it. But I didn't have a clue. I mean, it literally, when you watch Sinbad or something, you're like, oh, right, that's how they do it. Well, when you do, it's harder than you think, Margaret. So that's the thing. The problem is you need a thing, but also you need to know how to do the thing.
Yes,
I have
a problem.
Don't carve a niche that you don't actually have.
No, you can't.
No. First lesson of acting. For God's sake, don't carve out a niche that you don't know.
I've got an image of you in your family garden with your brother and your dad, and he sort of calls everyone to attention in the morning, and the family's there, you know, and they all go,
oh, it's very
attention!
Much.
And then you're there, and you do some sort of camp thing or something. You know?
Exactly.
In a powdered wig.
Yes, you've got a
fall. Yes, I peel off my beret and underneath humbling locks fall from my beret and I shake them free and go into a jitterbug. You're absolutely right.
Was there ever a sense you might go into the military?
Yeah, I think so. It was expected that I would when I was a teenager, and I was always introduced at parties as the one who isn't going into the army. Oh, you're the one who isn't going into the army. I think it was a big disappointment that I wasn't interested in. Well, I was interested in the army for a while. Yeah, I think until I was about kind of 12 or 13, I was very keen on it. And then, my brother, you see, is 7 years older than me. And he was dispatched to do a tour of Northern Ireland on Christmas Day in 1990, I think it was. I was leaving the house on Christmas Day to go to Dungannon for 6 months at the height of the Troubles, or, you know, towards the nasty part of the Troubles. And he lost a couple of friends in Bosnia, and I saw what was happening to him in the army, and I thought, I'm not sure this is for me, really. So I ran away from that on stage,
if anything.
Yeah, yeah. I can act, I can pretend. Yeah.
That sort of thing. Although, of course, act as jealousy, you know. I'm not saying acting is in any way as dangerous as being in the army, but I think that it's not as far away as people think. Not when you factor in a lot of those things we talked about earlier.
The last job I did before lockdown was playing a naval officer in a film called Operation Mincemeat, which hopefully it'll come out at some point in God knows when.
They finished filming it?
Yeah, they just finished filming it. It's directed by John Madden, and it's the story of the man who never was. Do you remember when they found a dead body and they dressed him up as a soldier during the war, and they filled his pockets with fake top secret information and dumped him in the sea in the hope that the Nazis would capture him and go, oh, and read all the papers and
go, this is about that.
And they acted on it, and it was the turning point of the war. It was an absolutely extraordinary moment. But but that was me.
It's a good job they didn't fill his pockets with mincemeat.
Quite right.
Otherwise, fish would have just ripped him to bits, and that would be that.
They would, absolutely.
We'd all be speaking German now. I don't think anyone in this country knows how close we came.
No.
What would the Nazis have made of all that mincemeat anyway?
Well, they would have thought it was a code.
Things might have been better.
Things might have been... What if the Germans had won? What an awful thing, Margaret, to say on
V-Day. Of all days, Margaret. To come up with something like that.
I've always felt your inclinations have been very suspect. I really have.
A little bit iffy, and now it's all confirmed.
Unbelievable. No wonder they picked Helen George.
I refused to do it.
You refused? Well, yes. You wanted to sing Deutschland, Deutschland.
I remember someone telling me how close the Queen's accent is to... Because I'm quite interested in accents.
Yes.
And, of course, the Queen's accent, if you go to a very, very high version of Windsor English, you end up with not that very far away from speaking like a German person. So the reason that the English royal family is predominantly from Germany is that because that is why they now speak like this. You see, it's very... Yes. So actually, those two accents are very closely linked.
Great accents as well. What's that, darling?
The royal family.
They do a German Christmas.
Do they? Rudolfampton and stuff.
Danke Jonathan.
Liebkuchen.
Danke Jonathan and all that. Do they play Danke Jonathan?
I really hope not.
God, I hope not. Danke Jonathan. I hope not. God, I can imagine the Duke of Edinburgh playing that. Probably kill him off if he did. That is interesting. But I mean, it also makes a very slightly camp German.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, she is quite camp, isn't she, the Queen?
Yeah. Is the Queen camp? So, military background, that didn't happen, thank God, because the theatre would have lost one of its brightest stars if you'd gone to war and shot them. But that is... And then what was the breakthrough? Where did it really start to happen? Because you've done lots of things.
I don't know, really. You've
been all over the world. You've worked with all the wonderful actors.
In Star Wars.
You've been in Star Wars.
Star Wars?
Which Star
Wars?
Yes,
yes. A very small. Rogue One, the good one. I gave my Lieutenant Cassido first order on board a battleship, and there's the big battle at the end. And I screamed something about Admiral Gorin.
You said what?
Yeah. Fetch Admiral Gorin immediately. It's a pretty small part. And there's another little glimpse of me later. Of course, a lot of my stuff was cut, Anna, but you're used to that. You know?
Oh, God, yes.
You were in Rogue One, weren't you, Anna?
I've been cut out of 80% of the things I've been in.
Mm.
And the other 20% is mainly just my feet.
You have good feet there, darling.
Oh, I do have delicious. Well, I've got one good foot and the other one's absolutely shot to shit. But
ribbons, like Brian May's bum.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that. What happened? He got his bum cut to ribbons, and a bad time for it as well.
I know. He shredded his glutes.
Was it a rake?
It was, but I think it was a ligament tear rather than a physical rupturing.
Oh, right. His bum wasn't ripped into shreds and just hanging there like so much meat.
No, like a butcher's window. No, not like that.
God.
No.
Wow. So Star Wars, that's fun. Lots of things like that. You've done lots of things. And what was it like working with George Lucas?
I didn't meet George Lucas. Gareth Edwards directed our film.
Oh, did he?
Very nice.
Oh.
Very nice guy. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, lovely, yes. Man. And
Sam must be very excited about that. How he's.
I lean on it quite heavily. I won't be shy of that.
Is he ready for Star Wars?
Yeah, he has seen. He's nine, and he's seen all, I think. I did a Comic Con a couple of years ago, and signed autographs there, and he came along and dressed as Kylo Ren, and he met David Prowse. There's a nice photo of him shaking Darth Vader's hand, dressed as Kylo Ren when he was about five, which is very sweet.
I was in a film. It was very derivative. It was called Galactic Lasers.
Okay.
Did you ever see that? This was in the late 80s. It was a sort of attempt to do Star Wars, but in Turkey.
Yes, didn't you have to make the noises yourself?
We did have to make a lot of the noises ourselves, which was all right. I mean, the ion cannons were not perfect. Some of the little pew, 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 you know, I mean, we're all right. But I really hurt my throat trying to do the spaceships. We had a poor little wonderful man, really great actor, called Simon Tyers. And he played the equivalent of R2-D2, is it? R2-D2?
Mm-hmm.
Bless him. It was a sort of, well, it was like a spiky ball that rolled around and sort of went, me, 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 like that, you know. And one day, bless them, but I think it was the same makeup artist who did my arms, but they put the ball on the wrong way round, rolled it down the hill, and it just came out like mincemeat.
Oh,
it was awful, but we kept filming, you know, because we had to.
Yeah, you did in those days.
It makes the cut.
The ball. Oh, God, yes, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. He's still acting. He's still acting. He's just...
Simon Tyers?
Yes, he's just riddled with holes, but...
Yes, I think I saw him in A Midsummer Murders last year.
Yes, he often plays people who have been shot a lot.
Yes, Colanders.
Colanders. And, of course, with the big scene, you know, we didn't have the Death Star. We had a melon painted black. I think it looks, it doesn't look as good, but on the budget we had, it looks, I mean, it looks like someone shooting a melon. But if you close your, you know, if you really use your imagination, you can go, yeah, there goes the Death Star. If you close your eyes, you don't watch. And also, it's best not to listen because the explosion is done by a fat chap called Penny Peters. If you don't listen and you don't look, it's like, yeah. I mean, I think it's on
That's
a par.
Right.
I don't know. All right, Mr. Rowe.
All right,
Mr. Rowe.
Interestingly, though, wandering around the set.
He's turned against you.
I've completely turned. I'm leaving the meeting.
Really quickly as well.
The actor's jealousy.
Actor's jealousy is kicking in.
Looking around the set, though, of a Star Wars movie is quite interesting because... the walls of all the starships and everything, if you look closely at them, they are just cut up bits of old hard drives and, you know, little capacitors and circuit boards. And you think, oh, that's what that is. It's like, if you were to make, oh, look, I've made a pretend Star Wars spaceship, you'd cover it with, you take a sledgehammer to a computer and you sellotape everything. But that's all Star Wars
because
is.
That stuff, you know, looks great, doesn't it, when you rip it apart?
Yeah, but it's all... you look closely, it's all just an old fan from a PC tower unit or a kind of, oh, that's a USB stick. Oh, that's an LED behind an old...
a bloody, you know, Muller light box.
Exactly.
You know, that's a light carton.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Exactly.
That's an old thong.
Is constantly finding that he's stolen a hairdryer and taping it apart.
George,
yeah, exactly.
Do they still
stop trying to create?
Hang on a minute, this control thing's a bloody vibrator.
Yeah.
Taking my remote.
Bullshit. Did you say that? That's what I say. This is bullshit and start pulling it all down.
Yeah.
I can't act with this. I'm meant to be on a Death Star, not a bloody... I just feel like I'm in a recycling bin. So, Rufus, we're going to have to end it now, but it's been lovely chatting to you. I feel like...
it's been divine.
Did you say it's been fine?
Been divine.
Divine.
It's been fine.
It's been adequate.
Well, I think you wouldn't be wrong.
Teething troubles might be appropriate.
That which was, of course, a play I did back in the 90s.
Of course it was. Wonderful. You were wonderful in it.
Well, it was all right. I mean, it was all right. It was all about...
Keith Barron?
Keith Barron, was
Keith
it?
Keith Barron. I think he was in it, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Wasn't he in it?
Did he play again?
He was the dentist.
Yes, of course he was. Of course he was.
God.
Wonderful. Wonderful actor.
He did a lot of research on that. He actually went off to be a dentist after he got so good at it. And he thought, fuck this, he can make more money and more regularly. People will always have teeth, but as the coronavirus has shown, they won't always be able to go to the theatre. That's a downer.
And which is more important? Which is more important?
Your teeth or your theatre? Well, I think your theatre. You can live with no teeth, but can you live with... Well, yes, you can. And the situation is proving it.
They're more similar than you'd think, teeth and
teeth
theatre.
And theatre.
And they're almost an anagram of each other.
This is, yes, they are. And this is the final speech of Teething Troubles, of course. Because it was about, funnily enough, it was about an actor who wants to be a dentist. It was a really bad play, actually, looking back. Really awful. And I think it was just that chap just wanted to be a dentist. And this was his route, when I look back.
His route?
His route. His route, yes, you see.
Yes.
Once you get into...
Can't you start? You can't stop, can you?
Can't.
We're just filling in time now.
We are. We would... Oh, God. Yeah. He's turned.
Let Rufus take his dog out.
Rufus, take your dog out. So let's just end with some thought. What do you give to the young actors? Because we're all scared. We're all in our bubbles waiting for it to burst. We're all thinking, you know, I'm all right. Obviously, I've got repeats from Galactic Blazers. They're not going to stop. But the young'uns who have only just probably got in a short film about the devil... What?
Yeah, I genuinely. Have you ever been in a film? Feel more sorry.
Right, go on.
About.
Have you ever?
Go ahead, because you were going to say something.
Last question. Have you ever? I was going to say something. I'm always going
to
say something.
You were have you to stop
in,
her.
Have you ever been in a short film where at the end you turn out to be death or the devil, or that everyone's dead?
No, my wife was in a film about Jack the Ripper with Christopher Cazenove, a short film.
Turn out to be the devil.
In which he turned out to be the reincarnation of Jack the Ripper, I think. I think that's what it was.
You'd be
I've played Tony Blair. I don't know if that's enough. I don't know if that's kind of answered your question, Anna.
Well, thank you. No, I was waiting. That's actually very good. Fuck, don't we want him back now? I know he did a lot of bad things, but come on.
I know.
Wipe the slate clean. Wipe the slate clean and bring him back. It's fine. We don't care anymore.
I was going to say, Anna, that
your final
I feel genuinely sorry. Mm. I feel genuinely, genuinely
that you did
sorry
this
for that I decided to do this. Yes.
No, sorry, sorry.
No, I feel sorry
let him
for
make
people
his point, Margaret.
Who are launching themselves into the world from college or from A level or from drama school or from music college or whatever art college
or just the streets
in this
sometimes
situation. Or just from anywhere, just aged 18, 19, 20, starting out in life, facing a global recession and a crisis of confidence in the arts and everything else. I think they're the worst placed people in the world, alongside newborn babies and people in their 80s.
And all I'd say on that is more parts for us, though.
That's,
I mean, we probably won't get to play an 18-year-old, but if things get really bad... No, that's a very good point. It must be very terrifying. But then at the same time, I guess they can hone their craft, can't they, at home?
No,
they can't. That's a terrible thought. Well, Rufus, enjoy your dog.
You can't act on your own. Thank you. I've enjoyed.
Can't act on your own.
You
that's
very
what
much, Anna.
Wrong. I've been trying to act on my own. You need
stop
other.
Stop it.
90% of it's reacting.
Have an audience. Exactly. It's listening.
Masturbation. So
that's it. Pretty much.
Stop with the percentages.
Lovely to speak to you, Rufus.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. You leave the meeting, and I'll say goodbye to Margaret, Rufus.
Oh, okay.
Is he going? Here we go. Now you're going to get a wheel. Everything I said, you were trying to talk over. You were trying to get in there. Oh, yes, Rufus, I've done that. Oh, yes, I think I've been in there. This is the last chance, Mark.
You've been listening to Talking to Actors with Anna Mann, starring Colin Holt, edited by Dan Snellgrove, part of the Great Big Owl family. Please subscribe, review and share. You can find Colin on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and YouTube. And the same goes for Anna Mann. Just look her up, you'll find it. I'm Sue Clinch. Ta-ra.
GreatBigOwl.com.
I'm Tilly Steele.
And I'm Helen Monks.
And this is Bitchin'.
I'm dyslexic. Yeah, why do you read the Wikipedia page?
It's good to practice.
A podcast where every week we talk about a different person.
So how old was he when he first popped on the scene?
That's a great
question. If you say he was my age, I'm gonna fucking die.
And we veer wildly off track.
Pop that Prosec.
Available on all your podcast apps. That's not right. Just
can you not say in the advert?
Available on all your podcast platforms. Just search Bitchin' or Great Big Owl.
We'll see you there.
That was all right.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.